What exactly is natural law, and why is it important to us as Americans? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is John Eidsmo, who is a longtime attorney and also a constitutional attorney, but he is also a law professor and the author of some important books on the history of the law. John, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Always good to be with you, Jerry. We've been friends for at least 30 years, yeah. I think longer, and I really admire the work you do in getting the word out to the people.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and likewise. So when it comes to natural law, I remember sometimes during some of the discussions with potential nominees to the Supreme Court, there were, you know, discussions of natural law and so forth. And first of all, why don't you explain exactly what it is and how is it important to us as Americans in our constitutional system?
I think that was one of the real problems in some of those Senate hearings, is senators were questioning prospective judges and justices about natural law when the senators really had no idea what it means. And I think the answer as to why that is so important is that probably the leading question that faces lawyers and government officials, judges, not only in this country, but really throughout the world, and not only now, but really over all time, is whether law is simply what the government says the law is, or whether there are some higher principles of law that government has to follow. And natural law really is the idea of higher law, that is, that there are these higher principles of law that government must follow, and frankly, that is the only basis on which we can say that there is such a thing as an unjust law, or that we can say there is a basis for disobeying law. I mean, if government is the ultimate source of law, then what basis do we have for saying government is ever wrong? The only basis we can say it's wrong is if it has to be measured against something higher. Jefferson, in the Declaration of Independence, described that as the laws of nature and of nature's God, this higher law to which all human law must conform, and if it doesn't, it is invalid, and there is a right and duty to change it, and if necessary, to resist it.
And explain to us who William Blackstone is and why he was important to the founders.
Blackstone lived in the 1700s. Sir William Blackstone of England was a judge and jurist and legal philosopher, and his work, Commentaries on the Laws of England, four-volume set, is very influential. In fact, the founders read Blackstone very carefully, and in fact, it was said once that many an argument in an early American court was settled simply by a quote from Blackstone. Mm-hmm. Also, Edmund Burke once said that Blackstone's commentaries probably sold more copies in America than they did in England. In England, you had centuries, in fact, thousands of years of a common law tradition that they could fall back on, but coming out here in the wilderness to America, we just had a greater need to get it in writing. And so if you look to the first edition of Blackstone's commentaries that was published in America, one of the things they would do when they would publish a work in America commonly is they would get subscriptions for it. In other words, to make sure that you didn't go broke publishing this, you'd get a number of people to sign up in advance, committing that they'll buy a copy. And if you look to the 1,000 signatures on that first edition of Blackstone in America, it reads basically like a who's who in American government. Mm-hmm. And not only American government, but you see leading scientists, doctors, pastors, many others who subscribe to Blackstone's commentaries. So it's a very important work and very influential in the development of American law.
Okay, and in fact, Thomas Parker, who is the Chief Justice of the state of Alabama, he actually said one time in an interview that 50% of the founding fathers owned copies of Blackstone's commentaries. I thought, wow, that is very substantial as a fact. And they read that stuff. And
they certainly did. In fact, there was a study that was done back in the 1980s by Dr. Donald Lutz and Dr. Charles Heinemann. These are two political science professors. They had read several thousand writings of leading American political figures from the founding period of 1760 to 1805, and they did this for the purpose of identifying quotations. They wanted to find out, who did the founding fathers respect? Where did they get their ideas? And they found that, well, first of all, the most widely quoted source was the Bible. The Bible accounted for 34% of all quotations in their writings. But as to the human authors they quoted, the two at the very top were Baron Montesquieu of France and Sir William Blackstone of England. And I suspect, as far as having a real influence on them, Blackstone would probably have exceeded Montesquieu, because Blackstone laid out the principles of law and government, and it was from Blackstone, also from John Locke and some others as well, that they understood this concept of natural law. I see Blackstone, in his commentaries, talks about three categories of law. One of these, he says, is revealed law, and he says the revealed law is the will of God, and it is found only in the Holy Scriptures. Then he says there is the law of nature, or natural law, and he says this also is the will of God, but we find this through the God-given power of human reason. And he says that revealed law and the law of nature don't contradict each other, and if they appear to contradict, it's because we've misunderstood one or the other, but that the revealed law, since that's reduced to writing, should take precedence. And then he says there is human law, which he calls municipal law. That's what parliaments and city councils and others enact in an effort to take the revealed law, the law of nature, and apply it in our society. But he says that no human law, no municipal law, is of any validity if contrary to the revealed law and the law of nature. And this high reverence that the founders had for this higher law, the natural law, they get that in large part from Sir William Blackstone.
So when we hear phrases like the laws of nature and of nature's God, and that's directly a quote, or, you know, a phrase that comes from the Declaration of Independence, that is, you know, basically Sir William Blackstone's biblical worldview being echoed there. Is that right?
Exactly. And John Locke, too. John Locke would have used very similar words, but primarily Blackstone, yes.
Okay, well, when you talk about human laws, and the human laws should not contradict God's laws, you think about some of the legislation coming out, you know, in Congress these days, and they seem to definitely contradict that. I mean, you know, like the Equality Act or H.R. 1.
Well, we see acts coming out of Congress today that, fortunately, they have not passed the Senate yet, and I'm hopeful that they will not in the next 2 years, and that we'll have a different Congress after 2022. But we're certainly seeing a Congress that has utter contempt for the Constitution, just as they have utter contempt for higher law. The whole idea of H.R. 1, this so-called For the People Act, which is anything but that, it is a For the Democrats Act, and really for the Democrat Establishment Act, but basically, this would federalize all elections, even though our Constitution clearly places elections in the hands of state legislatures, with a very, very few exceptions. And likewise, the Equality Act that would put into law various things, such as that churches and others would have to hire transgender persons or homosexual persons and so on, even though contrary to their religious beliefs, and expressly says that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act will not be a defense to any action brought under this so-called Equality Act, likewise abortion and things like this. Again, this flies in the face of the higher law of God, and my hope is that these will not pass. If they do, my hope is that the Supreme Court will strike them down as unconstitutional. But more than, I think, any other time in our history, we are seeing a Congress today, especially the House, that just seems to have utter contempt for the Constitution and utter unconcern for whether or not something that they want to pass is contrary to the Constitution or contrary to higher law or not.
Hmm. It's funny, too, how they'll often use, funny euphemistic names, to mask what they're really trying to get at. For example, the Equality Act, if it were to pass, would be anything but equal. The For the People Voters Act, would be really not for the voters. It would be, something that would make voting, supposedly more accessible, but it would make cheating far more, widespread. Now, as far as Blackstone is concerned, is he still relevant today? I understand that even sometimes the U.S. Supreme Court to this day will settle a dispute by quoting Blackstone. And isn't it true that Abraham Lincoln self-taught, essentially homeschooled, as a young boy, a young man, he learned the law by getting attained a copy of Blackstone's, one of those commentaries you referred to, just one of them, one of the four, and self-taught himself the law through that.
Honestly, Jerry, I am not positive about that, but
about the Lincoln part,
no reason to doubt that would be the case. People in those days commonly didn't go to law school. Commonly they would read law texts like Blackstone or like the American Commentaries on American Law by Chancellor Kent, who read Blackstone at a very young age and really patterned his commentaries on American law very much in the organizational structure and everything. He patterned them after Blackstone's commentaries. But as far as the courts citing Blackstone, in fact, in this nation's history, courts of higher review, that is, state Supreme Courts and federal courts, have cited Blackstone in our nation's history no less than 20,780 times.
Wow.
And that includes 6,745 times from 1789 to 1899, 6,512 times since 1900 to 1959, and 7,523 times from 1960 to 2011. So that would certainly indicate that not only has Blackstone been cited repeatedly by our courts, but that those citations have not diminished with time.
Wow, that is very interesting. But we live in a very intensely secular age, and there are obviously a lot of Americans today, including lawmakers and including judges and prosecutors and so forth, that want to kind of drive God out of the public arena. And yet Blackstone's whole point is that, God has revealed himself in the laws, and therefore to even cite Blackstone is essentially, it's like citing, I don't want to say like citing the Bible, because the Bible's the word of God, but it is citing a source that was certainly honoring to the Word of God and favorable to the Word of God.
Absolutely, and Blackstone clearly recognizes that the Bible is the inspired Word of God. As he says, the revealed law is found only in the Holy Scriptures. But you're absolutely correct on that. There are many in America today, including many in academia, many in the law schools today, and many in the legal profession and the judiciary and other parts of government that would like to drive God out and make Blackstone irrelevant. And practical effect of doing this, whether this is what they intend or not, the practical effect of doing this is that means there is no limit on government power. The idea of there being a higher law or a natural law is that we need something to give direction to what our laws should be.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take away God's law as being a limiting factor on man's law, then that means government can do whatever it wants. And if we say, well, but aren't they restrained by the Constitution? Well, yes, they are, but the Constitution can be changed. People can change the Constitution. It's not an easy process, but it can be done. And so even that is no absolute protection. And so, yes, absolutely. There are people who want to drive that out. And really, the idea that there is a higher law, a natural law, that is the barrier against tyranny, because take away higher law and government can do whatever it wants.
Wow. John Eijsmo, morallaw.org. Thanks so much for being with us, John. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. Good to talk with you.